Welcome back to Shattering Myths in our third hour. We are going to return to witness, to observe, to consider, to contemplate what Yahweh had to say about his covenant. We've spent the last couple of days focusing on what he had to say about circumcision being the sign of the covenant and the role circumcision plays in our participation in the covenant. I thought I'd turn back the page a little bit. Larry, do you mind if I start at the beginning of the 17th chapter, which is Yahweh's fourth meeting with Abraham, and just systematically go through what God had to say so we have this all in context?
No, please do. Please do.
Okay. Begins, and Yahweh appeared as God to Abram, and he said to him, I am God Almighty. Choose of your own volition to walk to my presence, and literally as a result of this decision actually come to be perfect. Pretty straightforward statement. God is saying there's a path that you can walk to him that causes us to be perfect. So I want to actually give the ongoing benefits of my familial covenant relationship as a means to recognize me and as a source of understanding between me and you and between you and I and your children after you, for you to think and understand and therefore respond. So just look at the first two statements. God has said, you know, that if you want to have the benefits of the covenant, if you want to participate in this covenant, walk to me. There's one path. Is there not two gone? Are you aware of any other path but the Mikre?
No, there's one narrow path that few people find.
Yeah. Do you find that path, by the way, in the Lord's Supper?
Not at all.
No.
That's a counterfeit.
Yeah. In fact, you know, what is even if you were a Christian, you were celebrating Good Friday, and you somehow stumbled on the fact, well, yeah, this is really a Passover that is being celebrated here. If you did that, would you follow the path to perfection? What would happen to you if you recognized that but stopped there?
Well, you might become eternal, but you'd be eternally separated from Yahweh because it's the next day, Matzah, actually, where you're perfected.
All right. Yeah, the doorway is Pesach. But the journey, well, that you have to open that doorway, or God opens it for us, where you have to go through that doorway, it's the first step, really, is crossing the threshold that cleanses our soul of matzah. And what God is saying here is you need to walk to me to become perfect, and that enables me to give you the ongoing benefits of the family covenant relationship. Then Abram fell on his face. Uh-oh, wrong move. And I can see how Abraham might do that, but that's not what God wants. So Abram fell on his face, and God spoke to him to say, here I am. Look up at me. My familial covenant relationship is with you. You shall be a father of many enriched people from different races and places. That's the fourth statement in the Torah's account of the covenant. And here you've got man naturally inclined, you know, wow, this is the God of the universe offering me this marvelous thing. I should humble myself in front of him. And God said, no. Here I am. Stand up. In fact, henna, the word that conveys, now pay attention. Look, here I am. It is a very graphic letter. It's repeated twice in Yahweh's name. Does that letter in any way, shape, or form suggest bowing down?
No, it would suggest the opposite.
Yeah. How is that letter drawn, Larry?
Yeah.
The hay.
You too. It's a person standing up, reaching.
Reaching up, right? Pointing up, looking up. That's how it's drawn.
It's actually reaching up.
Right. So what God is saying by henna here is stand up, look up, reach up. That is exactly what the letter that is the basis of this word means. He says, my familial covenant relationship is with you. You shall be the father of many enriched people from different races and places. Father and family-oriented covenant. Are we talking about a religious institution here?
No.
Is there a hierarchy of command and control that would be communicated here, lordship, if you will, being communicated and associated with father and family relationship?
No.
No. Is it, do lords enrich their subject, or do subjects enrich their lord?
Subjects enrich their lords.
Right.
In fact, they're usually shaken down and robbed.
Okay, and this was written to people from different races and places. That would be Goyim. The next statement, and then we have Diane calling in from Denver, and we'll go to her in just one moment. It says, and no longer shall your name be called out as Abraham. So he's going to change this man's name. So there's probably a message here, something that is happening where God is saying, now that I want to enrich you, that I want to empower you through this covenant, that God's going to change Abraham's name, which means afflicting father, to something more robust that conveys this. So, and no longer shall your name be called out as Abram, which means uplifting father. Your name, personal and proper name, shall now be Abraham, which means loving and merciful father who enriches. It's a compound of Ab, father, and Raham, merciful, forgiving. Tender, loving, affectionate, and compassionate. And Hamon means to enrich and empower. I have given to you, Nathan, I have granted as a gift to you the designation of the father of many enriched, Hamon, people from different places and races. To enrich, there is lots of ways you can enrich somebody. I'm going to tell you that I thought, and there's two that I think are applicable here, and we'll take Diane's call just in a second here. I think the two that are most applicable is that the kind of enrichment that I'm most excited about is coming to know and then understand. I think understanding is the most enriching thing in the universe. I really enjoy understanding. When I study Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and I come to know what he's saying and then understand what he's offering, that's my favorite form of enrichment. I call it enlightenment, if you will. But the second is that is being conveyed here is the one that I think of less than I do the other. But the way that a person was enriched in the ancient world is the old-fashioned way, it was through inheritance. When we participate in the covenant, we become God's sons and daughters, his children. And so we're enriched because we inherit everything that he has to offer. So I think both of those apply. Hello, Diane. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Ira. Good morning, Larry.
Morning.
So I've been reading about Caleb, and so when they came out of the wilderness, and so they got their inheritances then, and Caleb had already made a covenant for the inheritance of Hebron, and he had a different spirit. So do you know anything about that?
You know, I'm going to have to study why there is a difference in inheritance. You know, the only inheritance that I am concerned about isn't one from Caleb. It isn't one from Hebron. The only one that I care about is the one from the covenant. So, you know, my focus is always on the same things that Dode focused on, and the things that Dode didn't focus on, David, in the 176th Psalm when he wrote about, here are the four things to focus on in the Torah. Unless they shine a brilliant light and provide additional understanding of what God's offering, I typically say, you know, if time permits, I'll look into that, but I really care about the inheritance of being enriched by the covenant. I like the enrichment that comes by way of Abraham and his participation in the covenant.
Well, you know, and I also do too. I was just wondering, because everybody was buried in Hebron.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Rachel and so I was just wondering why Caleb had his request was to get Hebron. So I don't know. It's just something that I have been reading, and I have.
Yeah, and I the other thing is that while there are lots of folks buried in Hebron, physical bodies and the location of physical bodies and tombs for physical bodies has never been of interest to me. You know, I don't like the going to grave sites. This idea, you know, that you go to pay your respects, I think is a religious notion. So I'm not even, I must say, I am not interested in the dead, but interested in the living. I think it's kind of what Yosha said, you know, let the dead go bury their dead. Let's focus on the living. The covenant is about living, and burial spots are about the dead. But, you know, I'm happy to consider it and share what I learned. If there's something that's profoundly insightful on the Shabbat program this afternoon, this evening,
that's
depending
great.
On what time zone you're in. All right.
Yeah, one of the things was is because he said he had a different spirit, and that was the only question what I was, because it was him and Joshua, and he said he had a different spirit, and so, and that has a lot to do with the covenants and stuff like that, so, anyway.
You know, when you hear different spirit, there's only, you know, two genre of spirits. There's Yahweh spirit. And there's Hasatan spirit, and the Malach that are fallen, the demons of Hasatan. So when someone is presented with a different spirit, and they're associated with a place of death, a burial site, you know, there's a lot of insights just right there. You know, I do not want to inherit what the different spirit is offering, because that's either death or it's eternal separation from God. So it's why
Why would Caleb be going with Joshua, went into, wasn't it Canaan that they went in to go land of milk and honey? Because he was a warrior with Joshua.
Yeah, well,
and they were side by side.
As to why one would be of one spirit and another, I can tell you that the vast majority of people who crossed the Jordan River into the Promised Land did not embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant, violated it, were in opposition to Yahweh, and that condition exists to today. There's lots of people that live side by side with members of the covenant. In fact, members of the covenant are outnumbered by those of a different spirit by many thousands to one, side by side. And particularly in the Promised Land, the vast majority of Israelites are estranged from their God. Welcome back to Shatteringness. I'm Yana. We're here with Larry. Diane had called in from Colorado, asked about Caleb. And what I had said about Caleb was mostly true, not completely accurate, and I do want to address it a little bit more completely. There are two different spirits. There is Yahweh's spirit, and then there's spirit of the adversary. And so when you speak typically of a different spirit, in this particular case it's another spirit, and the other spirit that Caleb have is the set apart spirit. It's the Ruach Kodesh, and it's actually in the Hebrew addresses her as she. That the distinction in spirits as it related to Caleb, and Caleb, by the way, is means dog. When I saw that Caleb means dog, I was, have to tell you, I was delighted because of the fact that. That there are, of all of the animals that have been created on this planet, dogs are really extraordinary in terms of their willingness to follow, to love, to care about, to show genuine concern for, and want to have a relationship with their family, the family that they live with. And so Caleb means dog. And what Yahweh is actually saying about Caleb is that, you know, there's a wide range of Israelites that made this journey. And most of them, because they're adversarial to me, because they have a different spirit, they're not coming into the Promised Land. Caleb, he's my associate. Caleb is somebody that I care about. I have a relationship with Caleb. And so his spirit isn't different from Yahweh's. It is Yahweh's spirit that Caleb had. Caleb's spirit was only different from the from any other Israelites because he was with Yahweh. When, as you know, throughout time, most people, including Israelites, have chosen to rebel against Yahweh. So it it reads in this case, but this associate of mine, Caleb, because she, the spirit is of another, speaking of Yahweh's spirit as opposed to the spirit of the adversary that was permeating the others. With him, he has remained truthful. He's remained reliable. And he is interested, is committed to me. And so he, because he has consistently remained truthful and reliable in his relationship with me, he says, I'm going to bring into the land. And that he will inherit the land as a result. So the story of Caleb is one of someone that God says he's the exception. It doesn't mean that he was the only exception. Obviously, Yahusha was an exception as well. Moshe was an exception. But there were a lot of Israelites then as well as now. That, have associated the wrong spirit, sure.
This is just for your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
What do you suppose it was that caused people to fall away so breathtakingly quickly? I mean, they're walking with Yahweh 40 years. You know.
Yeah, I think, I know, it's my good friend Yoel is the one that constantly asks that question. How could you do that? See all of this stuff and, you know, you're 400 years. Yeah, 400 years, that's at least 16 generations, of being slaves in Egypt, being treated, like animals. And you're freed, and the adversary is literally dispensed by Yahweh, and you're being brought into this land. Now it had some well equipped, well armed folks in the land, but you know, all along the way, a huge percentage of the people were complaining. I don't like the manna. I don't like this long walk. I don't like the fact that the Egyptians chased us. I don't like the fact that there are really big, powerful armies and the like in this land. You know, complaining all along the way. And I think it all boils down, Larry, to the same thing, that the vast preponderance of people choose to distance themselves from God. You know, it was even when God was speaking to them in first person, brilliant light on top of the mountain, booming voice, sharing his covenant with them, that they said, no, that big voice, it's way too imposing, it's way too scary, I don't like that big light. Make it go away. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering Yahweh's presentation of his covenant. I'd like to read another couple of statements. Then we have William having joined us, as well as Larry. Yahweh was saying, after telling us that his covenant through Abraham is going to enrich people from around the world, from different races and different places, says, and I too will grow, be fruitful and flourish with you, in the extreme and to the greatest extent possible. You know, God telling us that he's going to grow explains how he can be infinite, explains why he has created the covenant, explains the whole concept of how we are enriched, our lives are enriched with the shared experiences that we have with family members. And so God here is telling us his view of enrichment, that he's going to grow right along with us. And so when I defined enrichment, I said, you know, here's two ways of looking at it. One is my favorite, which is I love to learn and transition from learning to understanding. I find that enriching. But I said you can also look at it as we become God's children, and therefore we inherit the universe. That is enriching. Yahweh here is defining it in a little different way. And he's defining it in from his perspective. And he says the enriching aspect of this is growing as a with us as a result of shared experiences. The whole nature of how we grow as a family, that when we enrich our children. Yeah.
It takes away the idea of a religious deity. He's saying, look, yeah. I share in this this reward. That's right. What he's saying.
Yeah, and I will grow with you.
Yep.
To the extreme and to the greatest extent possible. When he says, I'm going to grow with you to the greatest extent possible, that means that he is going to cause us to grow to the greatest extent possible. And the more he does for us, the more he's going to grow. That's just like when we do good things for our children, we benefit when we benefit to them. We've got William on the line. Hello, William.
Hey, how you doing, Yada? How you doing, Larry?
Good.
I'm doing all right, Mono. How about you?
I'm well. Thank you. Thank you. I'm just calling in kind of late here. I'm just been tied up with work, but just listening to what you were sharing there, Yada. And I think what it brings y'all is great joy to see his children do well.
Yes.
Just like I'm just ecstatic when my kids do well and accomplish something, and you know, it feels good to know that I assisted them in doing so.
Yeah, I can tell you, William, that and I'm sure this is the same for you and the same for Larry, but when my children accomplish something and something that brings them pleasure or joy, satisfaction, I am far more personally excited about that than I am for anything I've ever accomplished in my life.
Right.
Yeah.
You're probably more excited than they are.
I would be willing to bet that when my children accomplish something that's so worthy, that I am, more excited than they are over it, and that I'm hugely happier than for anything I've ever accomplished personally in my life. It is, what our Heavenly Father is saying through the covenant is that what's true for us is also true for Him.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just right, it's really profound in this case, because what it does is it presents God in a very vulnerable way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if my happiness, to a large extent, is tied to my children's joy, their satisfaction, their growth. If my happiness is tied to them, I've made myself vulnerable, correct?
Yes.
So has not Yahweh made himself vulnerable by tying his growth to ours?
Yes.
But when we're vulnerable, isn't that when we have the most wonderful experiences in our life?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I don't think it's possible to actually fall in love and to love someone unless you open up and become vulnerable to them.
Well, yeah, no, it is profound. I mean, you know, like Larry said, I wasn't on there, but it blows you away. It blows you away because he's the creator. And,
right.
And he doesn't want to be recognized Yeah. In fact, I don't think he wants you to recognize him as a deity at all. He just wants to be recognized as an individual, you know, as dad.
Right. Yeah, as dad. And I think it's important that he convey the reality that he's the creator of the universe. I think it's important that he create the reality that he is God, because these are pretty grandiose promises that he's offering, and so credibility is important here. But that being the case with his children, he just wants to be dad. And to think that the most powerful influence in the universe by an unfathomable amount has chosen to make himself vulnerable in this way by saying, I grow when you grow. That my happiness, my enjoyment is really linked to your success. What it does, it conveys two things to me, and I think it probably does to you guys. That the first is that God is the antithesis of the way he's presented in religious circles.
That's an understatement.
Yeah.
That's an understatement.
And the second is that God can make himself vulnerable to us so that his growth is linked to our growth, because he is so competent in his ability to help us grow. And so, since he knows that he's going to empower us, since he knows he's going to enrich us, since he knows we're going to have a marvelous time out there exploring the universe and with these shared experiences together, since he knows what he has done on our behalf will prevail, I think the vulnerability is fairly small, but he has definitely made himself vulnerable here and is telling us that these relationships with us is the entire universe to him.
Wow.
You know, it's a powerful, and it's such a empowering perspective. It's why I think that coming to understand who God is, as he defines himself, and understanding what he's offering, is just the ultimate paradigm shift in the universe. It is the single most empowering and enriching thing in the universe, is to understand who he is and what he's offering. And then
once you understand who he is, you understand there's no religiousness in this business. I mean, people get confused all the time on my FB page, and they join it thinking that it's a religious page and start throwing amen and every other word and all this. And I think,
right.
You know, I'm going to have to get off this page. This is not a religion page.
In fact, this is the next statement. If you think about shared experiences and who father who the father is and how we react with him as children, this is the next statement then really begins to make sense. And he says, and I will provide and give this to people from different races and places, Goyim, and royal rulers will come forth from you. And so what God is saying is that, you know, because of who I am, you know, I am Dad, but I also just happen to be God. That those who embrace the covenant, we become royal. We become as royal as you can possibly be in terms of authorized authority. We become God's children. And that makes, so he's saying, you know, I'm going to adopt you, and you are going to become part of my family, and since I'm God and you're my children, you're royalty.
Wow. It's amazing that you're talking about this today, because I was having a discussion with a friend of mine who's a Christian, and I was explaining how Yahweh does grow, you know. And,
yes.
And he was just looking at me like, whoa. You know?
Right.
And it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, if you actually, a Christian can't fathom that, because they've defined their God as all-knowing, all-powerful, all this and all that. And so that's how they defined their God. And so their God can't forgive, because he can't forget. And their God can't grow, so there's no purpose of engaging in a relationship with him. But the real God can grow, and the real God can forget, which is how we benefit from his means of salvation, and why the relationship that's known as the covenant is mutually beneficial. But the next statement here is that God says, and I will stand up and establish with my familial covenant relationship a means to recognize me, to understand who I am and what I'm offering, between you to help you think and respond, and between your offspring, so that they might also be able to understand and respond after you, regarding and on behalf of their dwelling places and generations, for an eternal and everlasting family-oriented covenant relationship, literally to be and to remain as your God and for you and your offspring after you. So, pretty straightforward here. God's got this one family, and this one family is eternal, and it's through his family that he is enriching, and that he is experiencing, that he is growing right along with his family. It sounds like it's pretty near and dear to his heart.
And that's a hard thing for people to fathom, just like it's a hard thing for people to fathom because there's so much of this. You know, when you make up a phony God in your head, you also have a phony way of approaching him. You know, really. You know, I love you. Love with no boundaries. So, it sounds like a Hallmark greeting card, you know.
Right.
And I wonder why people go and grovel to a Lord on Sunday. I mean that.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's not a God that would want to be worshipped isn't a God worth knowing. He's insecure. And so, you know, God is presenting himself as the one who is giving, but he's not giving his covenant because people are begging for it. You know, this is the whole notion of Christian prayer, oh, God, give me this, give me that, give me the other thing.
They're begging. They're begging. There's what I was looking for.
Yeah, God is initiating here, and he says, I'm giving this. I'm taking a stand. I'm doing everything that's necessary to give this to you. I want to give it to you. Because as I give it to you, I also benefit right along with you. And I will give this to you, he said, and to your offspring after you, including this land where you're currently living as an alien, the entire land of Canaan, eternally to possess. And I will exist unto them as their God. Well, an eternal promise. And a place to be with him. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with William and with Larry, both residents of the tax-free state of Florida. William, I've gotten to know you indirectly through email exchanges and a couple of times that you've called either this show or to the Shabbat show that we do on Friday evenings. Can you share a little bit with our listeners just kind of your background? You didn't come to participate in the covenant directly. Didn't you have kind of a long search for who God really is and what he's offering?
Yes, that's correct. I actually studied with almost every religion out there, I feel. I mean, I sat down with Muslims. I sat down with the Hebrew Israelite movement. I sat down. I was, you know, brought up Catholic. You know, went into the non-denominational Christian churches. It was just always, I always knew something was wrong. I actually got kicked out of one church for asking questions that I noticed some inconsistencies with in Bereshit and Genesis, where Yahweh is basically, I would say verbally, sharing the Torah with Abraham.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The tithing and so forth and setting animals aside, you know, the sacrifices and they're saying, Abraham didn't have, back then they would say the law, right?
By the way, Yahweh says in the Torah that he shared his Torah with Abraham.
Right.
Right? Right, and Torah means teaching, of course, and so that's a Paul line. You know, Paul in Galatians says that Abraham didn't have the law, so therefore salvation can't be through the law, and that's the whole myth of Galatians. But says that he shared his teaching with Abraham, his Torah with Abraham. So they would be wrong in that point of view. Even on the tithe idea too, does it ever ask people to pay religious institutions or clerics money? Or does God ever ask for money?
No.
No, no, never once. So
but
you were.
Paul sure did.
Yeah. So
Paul said he thought it was a sin that he didn't charge him.
Well, and most Christians cleave to what they call the New Testament, and so I went to 1 John, I believe, chapter 3, verse 4, and that verse actually defines what sin is, and it says that sin is a transgression of the laws in their Bibles. Well, what's the laws? It's the Torah, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so they had no answer for that because no Christian is Torah observant.
Correct.
So,
yeah, the moment they're Torah observant, they cease to be a Christian. And yet, Yahusha, who they claim is the founder of their religion, wasn't he universally Torah observant?
couldn't have been in the Messiah because he was that was part of the prophecy.
Yeah. So one of your conflicts, William, then was that Yosha was Torah observant, and yet no Christian is Torah observant. So isn't there a disconnect there?
Right, right. In fact, they teach that, that the Torah was done away with, that that Yosha, who they in their call Jesus, that he, I'm sorry, that, that they errantly call Jesus, that
yeah.
he is the, he fulfilled it, that he
and did away with
he
it.
Did, but he didn't do yeah. away with it.
And yeah, so does fulfill mean to do away?
Right.
If, no, I mean, to fulfill means to honor.
Right.
To support, do what you have promised, is to fulfill. Didn't Yosha say, do not assume that I have come to do away with the Torah? Didn't he say those exact words?
Well, that was my point to them, was I said, well, I don't understand. I mean, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed here, but his opening line is, I did not come
right.
to abolish, and like I said back then, the law.
Right. Yeah, it's actually Torah, which means teaching, but okay, yeah.
Right. So I'm like, you know, and so one thing led to another, and then I kind of ended up jumping into a messianic group and then realized that there were some inconsistencies there, and I think I emailed you this one. I'm not into the whole dream thing or whatever, but
yeah.
I had a dream about the name Yahweh. And decided to do some research, and I came across the Bless Yahweh website, and I ended up finding this wonderful program and a whole lot of other people who love the Torah.
And what you found is that when you actually focus on Yahweh's testimony, there are no inconsistencies. Well, thank you for listening. We look forward to being with you on Monday. May Yah bless.